Hi, welcome to Live at the Backyard Comedy Club podcast. It's me, David Whitney, with my co-host Chris Anastasi. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm glad you introduced me because I would have forgotten my own name at that point. I also like your the way you said hi. It was the most off-putting way to say hi to a group of hi.
Didn't expect to see all you here.
I wanted to try a game out with you that we might bring into the podcast at some point.
Yeah,
it's a basic game. It's just word association. Yeah.
Right. What, like mallet's mallet?
Yeah, I just want to see where comedians take the word association. So I'm going to say a word, and you say without, like, don't leave as little as a break as possible. Say the first thing that comes into your mind. So you ready? You ready? Okay. Doggy.
Horrific. Let's stop this.
Okay, so we won't be playing that game anymore.
So we had the lovely, charming and very funny Scott Bennett on this week. Did you enjoy meeting?
I did. I very much enjoyed meeting him.
Thank God for that. God, can you imagine if he said no?
No, it's a terrible time. Yeah, well, it turns out, you know, he's living nearby where I grew up.
Yes, you're from the same neighbourhood.
Yeah.
Outside
of London, you mean? Yes, the same neighbourhood. Outside of London.
The Badlands of the Midlands. you say that people in London think that, you know, everywhere outside of London is one place.
But they know of Brighton, so it's okay.
Oh, they know Brighton, yeah. I was doing a play once in Glasgow, and my then agent phoned me up and said, oh, we've got an audition for you tomorrow in London. And I'm like, I've just started rehearsals in Glasgow. It's like the first job I've had since I've been with you. And I was, oh, all right then. I'll get back to you in a minute. Phones back and go, it's all right. They'll meet you in Newcastle. Still not Glasgow, though, is it? I mean, I appreciate the efforts, but...
you've got most of the country.
Still hard to fit in a lunch break.
They're all just like suburbs of one big outside of London town.
Northern town.
Northern town. Oh, my God.
What part of Northern town do you live in?
Oh, well, I live in the general Northern powerhouse area, but then I was like, I was going to go about Maledown Road from Burnsley all the way to Manchester, and then up about half a mile, and you end up in Leeds.
That geography doesn't work, right?
No, it doesn't.
Right,
work. Piece of shit.
Right, let's get to the conversation that we had with Scott, because this is probably losing us listeners by
this
the second.
This is a series of bad Northern impressions, where we could just be listening to a real bad
Northerner. A real Northerner. Here's your real Northerner. I used to have a Honda Civic, and I took it to the QuickFit round the corner here on Bethnal Green Road, and I gave the guy the keys that the exhaust is gone, it's the Honda out front, and he came back 5 minutes later going, can't find it, mate. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, you can't find it? It's right there. And there's this low set white Honda Civic with a spoiler on the back of it, and he went, is that yours? I'm like, yeah. He said, oh, just doesn't suit you.
Brilliant.
And I was like,
he's profiled your car. Sorry, mate, I've been washing a Jaguar for about 2 hours. I've got a Range Rover ready. I'm expecting a young lad coming up with fucking sleeve tattoos, vaping.
And I said, I asked him, what did you expect me to drive? And he looked me up and down and went, a truck.
A truck. Fucking milk float.
But then I asked him who would suit my car, and he pointed at his receptionist, who was a sort of teenage Asian guy with tracks in his hair. I was like, that's the car I've got. The thing was, at least I could spot it in a car park. I could see the spoiler a mile off. There's my car, a black Volkswagen. Airports, I can lose a week looking for it. It's so anonymous. It looks like everybody else's car. What do you drive?
A Kia. Which is again in my show, because it's the most popular car for pensioners. So I'm driving a car that's like fucking to the grave, man. That's the next stop.
I've been in a few Kias, and they all seem to have
show
a
off.
Gear stick. has like really large numbers on it.
It's for old people.
Yeah, it really is.
Everything's big in there. It's like being in some fucking bifocals. But the only reason
I like the idea of anybody having to look at their gear stick to see where the gears are.
Safe. It's safe, isn't it? But I bought it just because it, I don't care. I really like it. It's so nondescript. Yeah. It's great.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever picked a car. I've bought a car when it was a deal was offered, when like extended member of family was getting rid of one, or another comedian was getting rid of one.
Do the cars pick you?
Yeah.
Is it Transformers?
Oh my god!
Honda Civic turns out to be Jazz. Your Volkswagen Golf is Bumblebee.
What is my car getting up to between Sunday and Wednesday when I'm not using it?
Well, when it was a Civic, it sounds like dealing drugs. That's what it sounds
like. Volkswagen just sits in a library for a bit. Cool, man.
Where are you based?
Nottingham.
And that's
up my way.
Yeah, you're Derby.
Derby.
Really?
Yeah. Born in London, raised in Derby.
Beeston, actually.
Beeston?
Yeah.
Oh.
So you probably know that.
Yeah, that's, I do know Beeston.
Towards Derby.
Yeah, well, Shane Meadows still decides to live around there.
In Beeston?
Yeah, yeah, still lives there. Still goes to the pubs.
Bizarrely, his kid was in my daughter's swimming class, which is a bit weird. So, like, when she was doing swimming lessons, he was sat like two people down, and I was like, I'm sure that's fucking Shane Meadows. And I was saying to my wife, I think that's Shane Meadows. She was like, ridiculous. And he got up, turned around, and Fred Perry said, it's fucking Shane Meadows. Shane Meadows. But yeah, he's walked around Beeston.
Yeah, he's just around. It's just
but all that Nottingham contingent live around there.
Mm.
So you got like, Andrew Shim lives in West Bridgeford. Loads of them. I've seen loads of them.
Oh.
Laura Socher lives in Ilkeston.
Oh, Lauren Soccer.
Laura Soccer, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I went to school with Lauren.
Yeah, well, all them lot. What's the other guy who was massive now? Who was in...
Oh,
Jack
O'Connor, yeah.
Yeah, all them lot came out of one drama group, didn't they?
Well, mine.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, we all came from the same school. Incredible. Same area of Derby as
that
well.
She's Ilkeston, I think. Yeah, Jack, she still lives there.
Jack used to live around the corner from me. We all used to be in plays and things together.
Imagine it.
We've all gone very different... Corner. Well, they all became actors. I became a writer. That was the...
That's because of your horrendous looks.
Yeah, exactly. Because of keep my scars.
Keep that behind the camera. Jesus Christ.
It wasn't interesting looking enough. I looked like stock Lego. What took you to Beeston then?
Well, I met my wife and I met at uni in Loughborough.
Mm.
And then she's from Beeston. Yeah. And then I, before comedy, I did design. So I got a job in a consultancy in Nottingham. Oh, nice. And then we just picked somewhere and then just went. That's
nice.
It.
So
now I'm there.
You did design at Loughborough.
Yeah.
You're like the only person that didn't do sports at Loughborough.
Everyone says that, sports. But it was a very sporty, heavy uni.
Mm.
But the design course was good, man. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And I did it for 12 years after.
I thought you meant the course.
I did it for 12 failing, kept putting money in.
It was too good.
They just asked me to leave. It's costing you a fortune. 65 grand, you're colouring in, mate. What are you doing? I left there, and then, yeah, we ended up going to Beeston, so.
Nice.
Yeah, but yeah, it's good. It's good. So you know that area?
East Midlands.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up there since I was...
Derby, which part of Derby?
Actual Derby, Alverston.
Alverston.
Do you
know Alverston? Friends of ours live on Kenilworth Road.
Oh yeah, I know Kenilworth Road.
It's very local.
It's a bit rough.
People in London are going to be loving this.
Yeah, this is very... If you visited Derby, go to Kenilworth Road.
Kenilworth Road, yeah. So yeah, so you're both London. Both London.
Yeah.
Left for London.
Left for London.
Yeah, well, I've been here most of my adult life.
You are London.
Wasn't born here like most
you're
of
so London.
London
you're Scottish like I've noticed London's become very Scottish.
Which part of Scotland were you from?
Aberdeen.
Wow. So that's
top.
Proper up top.
Yeah.
Have you done breakneck comedy?
I have, yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Doing it in November.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I must give him a call actually and get one back in there.
He's doing very well with it.
Yeah. Have you done it since having the new room?
No,
oh, right. So he used to have this music venue called the Blue Lamp. And it was beautiful. And it was a massive room. But he could only really fill it one night a week. And he couldn't really get people, I think, to travel to do one show. Because it is a long way.
Mm.
But equally, now he's got this, basically what was, I think it was an Indian restaurant or something. So it's a shop unit that he's turned into a purpose Not purpose built, obviously, because I've just said it's gone into a shop, but he's adapted it into it so that its full time purpose is as a comedy club, and it's a great thing for Aberdeen to have because it doesn't really have
nothing else up there.
No, it apparently has the highest concentration of strip clubs in Britain because of the oil rigs, but due to the Presbyterian nature of the regional Scottish, they're very well hidden.
Wow. It's like underground basements.
Yeah.
On the rigs.
Job sharing. Yeah. 4 weeks on the rigs, 4 weeks in the strip club.
You think you're buying a boiler and they're coming in. Right, you go through past that Worcester Bosch. It's like a fucking door and there's just a woman grating on your face. I'll take the boiler.
So after 12 years of design, did you go into comedy after that? Is that why you
I started doing comedy. Are you recording, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
God, this is very loose.
Oh, we're going loose.
You've sprung that on me.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
That's incredible. Right, I'm going to put some effort in.
All the incriminating stuff.
Right, we're on. Gone. I'm glad you did, because when that turns on, some comedians just shut up. But yeah. What happened was...
Did you get your natural scope?
Well, that's very good. I feel like you've sort of surveillance-style podcast. I feel like it's been at MI5 level. So what brought you to comedy and what's your PIN number? You could have got anything out of me. What's your current bank balance? And I just told you. I did stand-up alongside my job for 8 years, and that bizarrely, that's what my show's about, because I have only just I went full time last year.
Really?
after 8.5 years of doing comedy, a job, and being a dad, and then it got to the point where I was like, I'm either gonna be divorced, I'm gonna get fired, or I'm gonna end up being shit at comedy. And I thought, well, out of those three, I don't want to be shit at comedy. It's a terrible thing to say. I don't want to be divorced, obviously. But then, so yeah, I sort of decided to go for it in September last year. So yeah, I've been doing it sort of design for 12 years alongside it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it just a natural build-up of work that made the...
I think what happens is, I mean, you'll know this, and I'm sure you're saying, but you get to a point where you start to look at it all, and you hit a bit of a ceiling, I think, whereas if you don't commit to it, you're going to lose opportunities. Or it's just the fact as well, I think, that you want to be a full-time comic, because I think you don't get any time to think or write when you're trying to balance all this stuff. So what actually happened was there was a sniff of some tour support stuff, which they said to me, look, if he comes in, you can, you know, I just thought to myself, I can't say no because I'm at work. So I just said, right, I'm going to go for it. And then I just went for it, which was interesting because I found it harder than I thought I would.
The support or the...
No, the support was great, full time. And it's not for the reasons of that I don't like comedy.
It's harder to get up in the morning if
you're... No, it's more the fact that I still feel really sort of guilty about it. I still feel like it's a bit of a risky move, you know what I mean? Right. It's like it feels a bit adjusting to being self-employed.
I don't have a family, so I'm given a lot more leniency with irresponsibility because you don't have that pressing need to feed others. But what I find about being completely freelance, acting and comedy, is you never kind of give yourself 100% a day off. Even if you've been lazy and not done anything for a morning or something, you weren't off because you were feeling guilty for not doing anything.
Yeah.
I suppose the discipline, which I've never been able to impose myself, is to have sort of working times where...
Yeah.
And that then... Because even when, you know, I say... decide to have a day with a lady, should I so acquire such
a
thing.
Is that how you spend your days?
With a lady.
Nip up to Aberdeen.
Yeah. And, you know, having a lovely day walking around Camden Market, being a nice, picture-perfect couple, constantly there's still a voice at the back of your head going... I should be writing jokes. I should be emailing bookers. Even though the fact that if you were left alone to your own devices, you'd be just watching stuff on Netflix and not doing any work anyway.
Yeah, but I think there's. Do you know what that is? It is that little voice in your head, because I thought it'd be like, because I've got the only thing that saved me out of it is that I got a big shed, Nice. Which, I'll explain what happened. Say that.
This isn't a euphemism, right?
No, it's my wife got me a shed when I quit work, right? Because it works on two, because it gives me somewhere to write, but also she contains me. It's quite clever. It's like I feel like a spider under a glass. Do you know, like she's just gone, I know where he is, he's in the shed. So, like, I came home from work. And she'd had it done, like, in private, like some secret shed.
What a wonderful one.
Incredible. So I walked down the garden and it's there. Like, it's just up. So I was like, I've got a shed. So I insulated it and everything, got power in there, got the internet in there. And so I've got somewhere to go and write.
Nice.
So, like, I try and go, like, in there for an hour in the morning, a couple of hours in the afternoon. It gives you, like, somewhere to go and shut your mind off.
Are you a desk writer? Can you write a... you know, in a working hour type thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty disciplined. I think what I tend to do is, like, I've got a phone that I sort of jot ideas down and then I sit and try and do them. But the difficulty is, I think sometimes you never know until you try it then. But I like to have a record of it because I think sometimes you'll read back and you'll go, oh shit, that was a great joke. Why haven't I done that? And like you forget. I'm always amazed that people don't write stuff down, you know.
Yeah.
So I have got somewhere to go because the kids just take over the house, you see. Every room, like, you end up, like, just backed into a corner. Yeah. So, but, yeah.
And you leave the house to go there as well, so it still
feels like a disconnection.
Being in the house is a hard place to work.
It totally is. And I think then it sort of permeates that your house isn't your own, innit? It's like you can't switch off. But I've been really interested. I think that it was the first time I've been self-employed, and it's a weird discipline. I'm still struggling with it, if I'm being totally honest. And I'm still struggling with the fact that what I've traded in to do comedy is a bit of a weird, like a big career to do comedy. And it feels a bit of a weird mismatch. Mm. But, you know, when you've got your family supporting you, it's great, but it still feels a bit...
Yeah.
Bit of a scary move, man. Do you know what I mean?
I went freelance just over a year ago as well.
Did you?
But I went the other way where instead I worked too much.
But Starbucks will have you back.
Oh, if only they would.
I'd love a Starbucks job.
You know what? Sometimes I would. I look at those people. I'm like, you're so shiny. Aren't they really clean looking?
Yeah.
They look really clean
come
and nice.
Come out of a Starbucks factory. It's like Playmobil.
Yeah.
come out of a little.
They must treat them better, Starbucks, because they do seem happier.
They do.
Do you think?
Yeah, you go into Costa and they're miserable and they've got one tooth between all staff members.
What I can't understand as well is, like, if you want the key for the toilet, they give you on a massive... I've been down... I'm sure I'm not imagining this. Yeah, on a tyre.
Yeah, it's harder to nick.
Like, I put it on a tyre.
You don't get that in the London ones.
It's like world's strongest man just dragging it. Yeah, the toilets in London is an issue, though.
Yeah, it's hard to find a toilet. Although Starbucks... now they can't refuse anyone to use their bathrooms.
Is that? Oh, it's yes, they said that.
Really? Across the board.
So then you get people going there and shaving. Yeah. Full strip wash.
There's a period about 10 years ago, I think, that all the cafe's toilets seem to be in dark with the black light thing.
Really? You could see where you're...
It's not stop people banging up gear in there.
Yeah, so they can't find they can't find a vein, I think. Mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, that meant it was a problem.
Yeah.
Was that
for about a couple of years, every toilet in London seemed to have them, and then they just disappeared.
I just feel the guilt of, like, walking in to a restaurant...
Shooting up and not buying.
Not shooting up. Oh, it feels... It probably would help with the guilt. Having a dump and then just walking straight out, and I always have to pretend, like, I always... Like a fake wave.
Yeah.
Like... Oh, then I go out and pretend to be on my phone. Well, I don't know where you are. I can't see you.
Look behind the bar. Just
look behind the bar.
And then you do the finger, don't you? Like the thought finger, not the finger someone. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom.
I'm just going to nip to the loo. Can I get a menu? Sometimes I end up having dinner. It's the guilt of it.
There's
equilibrium, innit? I'm putting back in what I've got rid of. Yeah. But I don't like that idea of, like, that people watching you going, he's going. So, and then you're like, you have, like, a, you know, like pub watch used to have people's pictures up. I reckon they've got one in the restaurants where he's a shit and split. He's a lever. He's a serial pool lever.
Interesting name for an Edinburgh show.
Shit and split.
Came into this pub originally to have a shit, but I've ended up doing a 1-hour comedy special for a month.
To be here. I brought the bucket, and the bucket wasn't going to be used for money. It was because I blocked the loo.
You felt too guilty.
Do you know what? There's been less of ideas of Edinburgh shows than that. That is like, that's further on than some people are now. So I go in there, I pretend I need a shit, then I do an hour. God, when's August?
That's enough. No more.
That's enough. That's enough. I'll riff the rest. But I do. It's a weird one, that, isn't it? Like, but yeah, I sort of sometimes I like wake up some mornings and think, oh God, should I get a job? Should I just get a job? Because it's a weird existence, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that weird?
Am I failing?
Yeah.
Is this, you know, when you met those people growing up and you're like, oh, you were, or you'd hear your family talking about, so I was like, oh, they're head in the clouds, no idea, and then they're 50 and they don't know what they're lost.
But, yeah, interestingly, this is it. This is a bit sort of a bigger idea, but I look at all our friends, because we went to an NCT group when we had our kids, and you do that, it's like a middle class fucking thing where you go and sit there and they go, oh, how are you going to deliver your baby? And you're like, none, I'm the bloke, speak to her. They ask you questions. And then we kept in touch with these people, but they're all like moving on, they're all like getting big houses and big salaries and stuff. Mm. And they're like going, oh, you're doing your comedy and that. And you're like, yeah. But then I sort of get chatting to them and they're just as trapped. Like they feel like they're quite miserable. Because they're like, well, I've got to keep this up now. Yeah. It's like they've got to feed the monster.
Two things. One, move to London, you'll find that the conversations about buying houses will really trail off. There's an amazing speech from Jim Carrey online of him accepting some college honorary degree.
He was doing a final speech for the graduates.
Oh, for that, yeah. Right. And he tells this story about his father, who could have been, could have been a great comedian.
Yeah.
And he never did it because he was worried about supporting his family. So he had a job in selling insurance. I think he was a travelling salesman.
I heard that, yeah.
And one day the company went under and he was made redundant.
He was an accountant.
Yeah. And so he did something he hated.
Mm.
And he still ended up.
It's an illusion of security.
Yeah.
It totally is.
Yeah.
A contentment. Mm. I believe that.
And if there's no safety in anything, I mean, just X amount of John Lewis stores being shut down soon. People that worked were a manager at John Lewis store must have thought that they were fucking, safe as houses.
Yeah, how can John Lewis shut?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no real safety in anything. So if there's going to be risk, you might as well
do what you want to do.
Exactly.
Also, you know,
and that will
so
be a good
things.
Thing for you to have logged in your memory to tell your children when you can't feed them.
Now I know. There's no lights on. Daddy's over here with a torch. Daddy's over here. Right. Don't get too near the candle. Right. Now I know you've not eaten for 3 days, but. Here's three jokes.
I'm giving you the most important food of all, food for thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Go for your dreams.
Tuck into that. You know, I know there's no lights in the house, but... You know,
no money for medicine.
Now, Daddy decided to follow a dream, and that means that you can't follow yours. Because we're skint.
I had a great therapist once. We just used to sit there and chat.
This is such a comics art chat.
I had a great therapist.
That's only in the field of arts can you start with, I had a great therapist once.
Very openly as well. Like, if this was in the Cotswolds, it would all be very like, therapy, of course not. My family's perfect. I was lying down on the couch, on the couch.
It's a mega bus therapy.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, you get on coaches and you pay him £2, sellotaped into a birthday card.
I like the idea of going, right, you're going to have to switch at Derby because I've got someone else coming with this fucking mega bus style. They would do that if they could on mega bus. Like an extra.
Would. Yeah.
Right, we're just going to set off. It's going to be rammed in there, but at the back's a psychologist. So if everyone can pipe down.
Well, if you ever print off the Ryanair itinerary of things you bought that are included in your price, one of them is oxygen.
Yeah.
Oxygen's actually in there. So, like, is that an option? Can I just, if I'm going to like Hamburg, can I hold my breath?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Sit on the wing for free.
But,
so go on, tell me about this therapist.
I had this great therapist once, and he said to me on that, he was like, you know what you're cursed with? You're cursed with being the generation that makes the money to give to your children. And it was always this thing that sat with me. I was like, oh yeah, like, I guess my parents taught me that, you know, hard work, and then if, you know, I make good enough money, I can then teach my children that money's awesome, but not how to work hard, and then they will probably slip a little bit, and that'll just have to keep perpetuating itself. Or I'll just teach them to invest, and then they'll be fine forever.
I think it is that provider's anxiety, innit? Mm. Yeah, but I think it's a weird one. I Yeah, I don't know. I've had a therapist. Have you had a therapist?
I haven't actually.
You need to have a therapist
because
you're not in the therapy
one.
Club.
Yeah. Look at the way you two just suddenly like.
Get a therapist and then come back and finish the podcast when you've got some fucking perspective.
Once you go therapy, you don't go blurapy.
A professional writer.
Was
right?
it CBT you had? Or was it not?
I've had all of it.
I had CBT. CBT is cognitive behavioural therapy.
Uh-huh.
And it's weird.
It's a bit Piaget.
Well, they get you to do weird things, don't they? So, like, once you used to get me to do was have two chairs, and I'd have to sit and have a conversation with myself. Sounds insane.
They make you crazy.
So you'd go like, yeah, I'm worried about the future. And then you'd have to get in the next chair and go, shut up! The future's not even decided. You've got it all ahead of you. You make your own future. But what if I'm not here to make a future? It goes on like that for about 2 hours.
Do you have to do the voices?
No, I just enjoyed it. I had to put different hats on as well, just to feel like.
CBT. Yeah. I did that. The first one I did was CBT, and they'd give you lots of like little tasks like that you're supposed to do. That in your mind you're like, this isn't going to work, and then they're supposed to work over time by doing them. Yeah. But it wasn't suiting me. I just needed someone smart to chat to. Like a bin, like I need a mental bin just to go, because it's shit you don't put on your family, your friends, do you?
You need what you need is a caring Alexa.
AI, Alexa. I can't wait.
An Alexa with sympathy, like that.
Yeah. I don't even need sympathy, just someone to, just for me to be like, you know what really pisses me off? Because no one wants to hear about all the things that annoy me in my day. I find
as well, when you get therapy, like you always get it at the time when you don't need it. Because there's like a waiting list, and you go, I'm fine now, and they get you in there, they go, what's wrong? You go,
oh, I paid. Yeah. I ended up paying. Yeah. I couldn't do with that NHS stuff. Wasn't working.
Lay on that couch.
Wife cried.
Yeah. She was quite quick to get rid of me. She was like, is everything fine now? I was like, yeah. She went, right, dismissed.
because you were an NHS.
Yes, well.
And a very different attitude to somebody who's being paid for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And every time.
They find a good reason why you need to come back.
Yeah.
What was really unnerving is every time I'd have to go, you fill out a questionnaire, and they always ask the same question, right? And she goes, right, just before we start, are you feeling okay? I said, yeah. She said, are you feeling like you're going to do harm to yourself? No. How about your children? Are you feeling like you're going to do harm to them?
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, no, but then you go, no. What would have happened if I'd have said, I reckon there's a button under the table where they'd have gone, just evacuated the whole family. Wow. Just, it's a frightening moment where you just go, obviously, if I answer that, what's going to happen there?
What's the next step?
There'll just be a helicopter over a school, just paratroopers, just pick her up.
I mean, is that what you have to say just to get another free session? And look, give me some more free therapy, otherwise the youngest one gets it.
Yeah.
I don't really love him yet, so
we haven't bonded.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I won't miss him.
This is going to be collateral damage. I need another session. But yeah, it's so.
Do we have to go through this every week?
I think it's important, though. I think everybody in the world should have therapy. Mm. I'm not saying that's a privilege of people, but people should have therapy, because I think whether you feel healthy or not, you should just have it. I think it's just good for your mind. It's good to have someone to put that or think about a way to be better. David Whitney, I think you should. You've never had therapy. Not even for someone to catch you up back to the year 2018.
Do you think
from
the
1920s?
Do you live in the 1920s?
He's from
Chris thinks that I'm stuck in the 1920s.
I like the idea, when you mentioned about the car thing earlier, what car you should be driving. I like the idea that he might come out like on a penny farthing. Something, I've serviced the penny farthing, sir. Good day, sir. It's old Mary Poppins on you.
Just because we're in East London surrounded by hipsters doesn't mean that we all go around on penny farthings.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever had your shoes shined?
Yes, many times.
Yeah. The man is stuck in the 1920s.
The thing is, apart from obviously dysentery and that, you'd have your own chimney sweep or something. It'd be quite good. 1920s.
But the problem is people always say, you had this, you had that. I'm like, what if it was the other way? What if you were the chimney sweep?
Yes.
Well, it's always,
it was a miserable life for a lot of people, wasn't it? The
20s. Do I need to explain the bell curve of capitalism again?
No, please, God, no.
I would like to think, would you you'd be like a privy, would you be like a black,
yeah,
I could see
privy.
You as a Blackadder type, like a
Lord Flashheart.
Mm. Yes! In fact, that's perfect, isn't it? Comes in the kilt. Comes in with the bagpipe. That's like more of a bugle, isn't it? I don't know what bagpipe noise does it make. I don't know
it's sadder.
Your horse is ready. Highness, we've changed the shoes. It's going to need new back brakes. Imagine getting a horse serviced in then, like a quick fit. Yeah. You'd have to like go, like you'd have to get.
That horse you've worn
the shoes. The worn shoes down, mate. Is it back? Is it cylinders? No, it's shoes.
Yeah, they would have had to take.
Yeah, back left shoes. Imagine that though. They would have had to service it like a garage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? It's probably a parable. A parable blacksmith. Life. Blacksmith is like the quick fit of the 20s.
Yeah.
Okay.
There'll be a third of that in the 20s. Right?
Clearly.
You're going to need to head to the shed to finish that idea off.
I love
off.
That shed. I do. It's a weird one, you know. I like my kids, but I love my shed. I do.
Is honestly, that the title of this year's show?
No, but there's a lot. Because I don't. I think every man needs a shed. I think everyone needs it, man or woman, need a shed. Because I honestly. My mates will never ask me how my kids are, but they always ask me how my shed is. They do. They just go, how is it getting on?
What, the shed? How is the shed?
How's the shed? You know, it's a year, is it now? Oh, must be so proud. I think I might get pictures in the wallet.
Yeah.
Do you know, like you show them, like just show them like a couple of like there's a view from the back there. Look at that, mate. All glazed. You know.
And a little bit of rot there, but don't look at it.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Have you adorned your shed with anything?
Treated it. Yeah. Bit of Cooper and all.
Have you got toy, like metal
No, I've
toys?
Got his carpet in there. Got it insulated. And I've got built a desk.
Do you have a calendar with scantily clad women draped over motor cars?
No, no, you can't. Yeah, I know what you mean. No, I quite like... No, I'd like cars draped over women.
No, sounds a bit painful.
It's like a woman like a speedboat.
Why have you parked that Austin Martin on that woman?
Just horrible road accidents.
You never get a calendar like that. It's a proper... An RTA of a, you know, just someone sweeping up glass, putting police tape around.
That is essentially the opposite of those scantily clad women on cars.
I mean, that's not the direct opposite. That's horrendous, like fucking.
I mean, socially they are a
nightcrawler calendar or something. It's, yeah, I've got, what else have I got in there? I've done that USB chipboard, varnished it. It's nice, quite like, I just need to get. The one thing that inspired me is my mate's got, like, he does his own home brewing. He like he's just craft beer in his.
All right,
it's really good, isn't it?
You have no job. If you start brewing in your shed, you will get no work done.
No, oh, and he just goes down there and he's got like a little bar area with a pump. He just gets hammered, and goes and tries to put the bin out, shit faced. But he's got that. He's doing that, and it's like. It's a little world, isn't it?
There's a lot of people around that area in the East Midlands. I've heard of microbreweries where you can go and it's like a mini pub, but someone's just set it up in their living room.
Someone's opened
or in their garden.
Yeah,
in the
there's
shed.
One around the corner.
There's
a
couple of people now opening their houses
in,
and doing it.
In their houses, right?
Yeah.
In the Hackney Wick, there's a Howler's Brewery, and they're literally. There is no divide between the brewery and the bar space. You're just in one. It's just one room, as well. And then basically four tanks, and you just go that one, and it's fresh from the tank. It's beautiful. Don't recommend it enough.
The thing is, it's becoming a big thing that now. I think we'll see that explode.
But what these people are, they feel like they're taking an independence on their beer by doing this, but what they don't realise is they're setting up a way, essentially the vending machine for beer, so they will just be replaced by a machine that makes the beer. And then that's what will happen.
It's like SodaStream, isn't it?
Why?
Because you just got the barrel there, and you'll just have a machine make it, you'll have a machine dispense it.
But I mean, it's well, I mean, there's
an art form to it.
I mean, that's what essentially what you get when you buy something that's gone for a factory brewery. But these microbrewery things are giving more ownership to the craft, aren't they?
We'll see.
By having automaton to a smaller amount of people, you have to. I mean, well, it's going to be a struggle to keep them open, financially speaking, because you've got things like in North London, you've got Camden Hells, which became so successful, it decided that Diageo would buy it, so it's now essentially Guinness.
Well, my mate, he's very. It took him years to get to where he's got to in terms of something that's drinkable. I remember when he did the first one and he rang me up and he gave me one for Christmas and he went, "You're not drunk, have you?" I went, "No," he went, "Don't." It's like, I don't know what you're going to say. It's made me grow an extra bollock. I mean, we're on three bollocks now. But he said, so he's took him ages to get it, but it's really, really good. Yeah. So he sends me a few bottles every time.
Are they, were they Indian pale ales?
Pale ale. Yeah. And it's quite fruity, but then at the bottom there's like a bit of residue. So I don't drink that.
You know, do you use it for anything else in cooking? No. Put the rest into a chili or something.
You are definitely 1920s. Look at the way you make do amend. Look at this. We're just going to be another wall, Governor. We've got a fagging. We've got a UC yeast from the bottom of the glass.
Went to KFC with him. He kept the bones.
Have you got any bones for stock, sir? Don't throw that skin away. We can make fritters for that for the children.
You can see him just wandering around London. You'd survive quite well, actually, in London.
In the park, harvesting, free, you know, doing, what's it called? Foraging.
Foraging. Foraging for mushrooms and berries.
What, in Victoria Park?
But he wouldn't do that from the 20s, he'd have a boy. Boy!
Go find something for tea.
What day is it?
I could only find Brecon, sir. Fucking... sacked. Get some nettles.
Come the zombie apocalypse, I am going to be in a better nick.
I think you will. Well, interestingly though, I've thought about this as well. If there is a zombie apocalypse, comedians, what skills have you got?
None.
So we're going
driving
to like,
very long
jesters,
distances.
Driving, that will not be happening. Jesters, no one's going to want entertainment because they're miserable. So like you then I'm going to have to go back to the skills I had, which was design. But then like I'll be so rusty, I don't know what I'll be doing. But then you're like, so I think in the...
Do you keep your hand in a tour? Do you do your own Edinburgh posters?
No, it's not graphics, it's products. It's 3D design. So I can't really do much. I draw every now and then because I don't want to lose it. Because I did enjoy it, bizarrely. I really enjoyed it. And it was only the fact that comedy...
took over.
Well, yeah, also the weird thing about comedy is I think if you're quite obsessional... The thing that used to get to the heart of it was I didn't want to stop because I didn't want to look back and regret it.
Yeah.
So that is a more powerful thing than failing.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I think if you go, right, well, I'm just going to carry on and if I'm stopping, and then like you watch like 20 years down the line, you're thinking, should have done that.
Mm.
But then if you do it and it don't work out, you'll go, well, at least I know.
Right. Yeah,
but it's the price is quite high, isn't it? That's the only thing. But
well, you've already set yourself up. You know, you could easily get back on the wagon if you needed to.
Yeah, so back on the wagon. Yeah,
back on the.
But
design
the thing
wagon.
Is, I think it's an interesting one because design's a young game as well. So you're like, you are making quite a choice. I probably can't get back into what I was doing, but I could probably get into something related to it. But yeah, I think you do hit a point where the fear of failure, is less than the fear of regret. I think that's right, isn't it? Right,
and it's good as well because you've made such a bold choice that it's you've got to fly away from the flames rather than just let yourself fall into them, right? You've got to work as hard as you can.
Well, there's nothing like a paying a mortgage to motivate you. I think that's one. I found I've been working harder. I worked hard before, but I found like I'm doing more now to try and get things going. You know?
I think this is going to sound very therapy-esque. I have...
How do you know?
Well, yeah. I have done my... bet. Well, I think this would be the type of thing I would discuss in a therapy session is what I mean.
Please go.
I've spent most of my adult life avoiding responsibility so that I can live this like weird life on the road doing whether it be plays or stand-up comedy. I can make my own choices and not have dependents and mortgage. But I do think when I look back at wouldn't I have just worked a little harder maybe if I had if I'd acquired some responsibilities then maybe I'd have just pulled my finger out a little bit more. Don't you just find a way regardless of what.
I could see you with a little toddler in post-apocalyptic world working your bugger off to keep them alive.
Well, I mean what we're doing there is just describing a phenomenally cinematic film poster.
Yeah.
Me he had bagpipes and that's all he had.
Bagpipes in one hand and a toddler in the other.
Yeah.
With these bagpipes, we will save the world. I like the idea of that.
Matt Whitney.
And all you see is just a kilt blowing across the breeze. Like,
one Scotsman.
Like the clan. Then you reconnect with the other clan and then you... It's Braveheart, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, I thought you meant the Ku Klux Klan.
It's Braveheart meets zombies.
Yeah, it's zombie Braveheart.
God, that's only got to be, it's a matter of time, surely.
Till that's a film.
Bravehearts versus zombies.
Yeah, absolutely. People want to see... Well, it's like Highlander zombies.
Versus zombies, yeah.
Could get Mel Gibson, though.
See, well, I think he's available.
Probably just torpedo the project by saying something inappropriate, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he's really racist against zombies.
I don't like zombies. I don't like the way they move.
He's like, you know the zombies are just an allegory, right? Yeah. Shut up, Mel.
Mel, just read the lines, mate.
They're part of the Illuminati. They're coming slowly for your brains. Do you not think that isn't that clear enough for your brains?
It's more to these zombies. Just do the line.
Oh, yeah, they do come for your brains. Does that mean that they are Love Island? Love Island is like a digital zombie.
Chris is the face of Love Island.
You're not the face of
Would
Love
Island. Would you get all that? That's a trouble.
No, explain the fact that you are the face of Love Island.
I'm not the face. So I occasionally do get like put forward for some like actor-y type things because I have a face.
Yeah.
And
it's a very beautiful face.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
It's not as terribly scarred.
It's on the inside. So I went along to this thing and they were like, oh, it's Love Island.
Right. Yeah, did you audition for Love Island?
I didn't audition for Love Island. I got some part in some promo.
Promo for
to be on some promo.
You're the face of Love Island.
I didn't know what Love Island was.
No.
It's Big Brother for people who want to work in porn.
Oh, is it? Right. Because I was like, there was a girl there and I'm like, is she the island? I couldn't understand.
Is she the island?
I thought it was like Lost.
Is
I was
this
so
the
confused.
Island? Are you the island?
Yeah, where's the polar bear to come and, you know, destroy this dumb person?
Yeah.
So I was like on this thing, and then they were like filming me all day, and then this Love Island came out for the first episode, and they'd clearly shown the promo just before, and I know that because I got over 100 messages on my phone. I was like, oh my god, are you on Love Island? Oh my god, are you on Love Island? Turns out they just like put me right front and center on the screen on the promo.
Is it still going out?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't watch Love Island.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Not for me.
Well, you say
I'm trying to be taken seriously as an intellectual writer.
But that was always a hide into nothing.
I love the idea of you swilling some whiskey and being interviewed in like a late night sort of thing and going, when was your break? Well, I remember I did a promo for Love Island. Do you remember Love Island? It was a satirical programme about dating. But everyone thought people were going on there and just shagging, but there was more to it than that. Don't you remember when one of them stood up and recited Dostoevsky in a bikini?
And he took a shit on a man's chest.
The meaning behind that was incredible. You've got to start somewhere, though, haven't you? That might not be the that. That's pretty good. I joined Spotlight the other year and I've got nothing out of it.
My girlfriend makes fun of me because she thinks that I'm going to have an acting career, which I don't want, over a writing career. So it would just be replaced by that.
Parts your girlfriend thinks you'll accidentally get a career that other people work.
I've had parts on TV shows.
Do you know what, though? It's a weird one, isn't it? Because that's, again, acting and anything like that. You just don't know, do you?
Yeah, you can just be lucky sometimes.
You can just get lucky. I mean, you look at some people that have fallen into it, like Ricky Tomlinson, no training, just falls into a role. Yeah. I think it's a strange one, though, isn't it? I've not done any acting, but I'm trying to... I'd love to do an advert. I'd sell my soul for an advert. I don't know what I'd do an advert for.
Can you imagine you'd be doing?
Kia. I love my sports wagon. That's it. It's got a little stop here for Werther's Originals. A few Werther's in there.
Has it got any accoutrements to it that are like are specifically for the
older people? No, well, when I've taken it in to be serviced and I've been in there, and they're all like greyheads sat around with a free coffee and that. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. I'm meant to be a cool comedian, but like they are old. And they always like, you can see as well, they come and they go, oh, thank you, Mrs. Jones, the under the keys and that. I said, thank you! She shuffles out. She's round the front. I'm like there, look like in the future down there, sat next to all these old dears. But I think there's something comforting about driving a car that old people drive.
Yeah, you know it's safe.
You know it's safe, don't you? Right. It might be the last vehicle. The next trade into hers.
It's got roll bars.
Roll bars? They ain't no roll bars. They ain't driving it at speeds that will need roll bars. It's got, I don't know what it's got. What has it got? I don't know. It's got a parking centres that only work in the garden centre.
So that was Scott Bennett. I hope you enjoyed the episode. We've been having a think over the summer and we've decided then we might have a different format. So we go, what we're going to do is come up with some games, some sort of tasks, and really put our guests through the ringer. If you have any ideas for these types of tasks, tweet us, BYC Podcast. You know where to find us. Hope you tune in for the first of our season 2 of Live at the Backyard Comedy Club podcast. Have you got anything to add, Chris?
It's going to be big, David.
Good.
Real big. Season 2. Tune in. Find out next week on Live at the Backyard Comedy Club podcast. Same name, slightly different format.